Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Tim, welcome to Free Talk Live.
Thank you for having me, Ian.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
this is my first NarcoPoco, so this will definitely be the biggest narco voluntarist conference I've ever been to, because it'll be the first. But I'm amazed at how many people are here. Just, yeah. I mean, I was standing in line, and the line's probably at least 200 people deep to get a ticket, right?
I don't know how many hundreds. Yes, for sure.
At least.
And you can hear them behind you. I mean, it's just a constant cacophony of noise from people talking with one another, old friends seeing one another again, and new people meeting new friends. So we met yesterday at Mexico City Airport. You were hanging out with Ernest Hancock from Freedom's Phoenix and Declare Your Independence. And apparently you guys live nearby in Arizona. You guys are friends from there?
Yeah, I'm one of Barry Hess, who ran for governor several times in Arizona, introduced us a few years back, and I've been on the show. I think I was on the show like over 20 times the past year.
Oh, wow.
Breaking down. I was pretty much his financial guy to break down what's going on in the system and to document the ongoing financial collapse as it occurs.
So the financial collapse. Now let's talk a little bit about that, and then we can talk about you and what your path and journey has been so far to liberty. So what kind of collapse are we talking about here? Are we talking about the collapse of the U.S. dollar?
I think ultimately it leads to the collapse of the U.S. dollar, because right now the Federal Reserve is in a rock and a hard place. That's of their own doing.
You're kind of new to Bitcoin, from what you were telling me yesterday.
I am. I've been following it for a while, but the problem is, I was listening to guys like Peter Schiff and right now half the audience is like boo, or probably 99% of the audience are like boo. But anyways, I've been following the price movement for a while, but I was down in the weeds of it and thinking, okay, the odds of this really taking off. I didn't have the full appreciation for it. Wasn't really until I found Ethereum and how there's decentralized applications that can run on top of that and the programmable money that I was like, wow, this is really something here.
Yeah, for sure.
And this has the power to overthrow governments, central banks, and then now that the genie's out of the bottle, and we've got 65-year-olds coming up to me unsolicited who would never in a million years I thought would come and ask me about this. Now they're asking me about this unsolicited.
Yeah, we in Keene, New Hampshire, where I live, there's a little shop called Route 101 Local Goods, and we've got a Bitcoin vending machine in there. And it's interesting talking with Chris Reitman, who's one of our co-hosts normally on Free Talk Live. He's staying in Keene and working, but he gets to meet the people who are new to Bitcoin every day, like people who come in, they've heard about Bitcoin, they want to get some, they want to use the Bitcoin vending machine, and there's a surprising number of elderly people of retirement age who are interested in this. They have money, they've earned a lot of money in their time, and they want to put it in something that's not the dollar. You've got your own podcast. Is that available at Libertarian Advisor?
I do, yeah. So you can find it there. I've got a podcast section. I'm on all sorts of different platforms like iTunes, Google mm-hmm. Play, Stitcher, Podbean. I don't know. You can whatever you use. You probably have a way to hear me.
Cool. And so that's over libertarianadvisor.com. We were just getting started in the last segment where you kind of talked about, or we're beginning to talk about, how you ended up here, meaning that how you ended up just generally coming to the ideas of liberty and specifically leaving your career, basically, and to where you said you had to pay some gigantic fee in order to leave a contract that you were in. So kind of pick that story back up wherever you left off.
All right, so I've been a financial advisor for about 10 years, but I started my career the day the market collapsed, the day Lehman Brothers went down. So I was, right from day one, trying to really reverse engineer how this whole thing occurred. And that's really what led me to guys. I was trying to figure out, okay, how do you fix this problem? And then once I really understood this problem, there is no fixing this problem because the money is backed by debt. And then
right.
I was thinking, what politicians are there that are addressing these needs? So I found out about the Federal Reserve, which then led me to Ron Paul. So, a lot of people found out about Ron Paul,
then
which led them to the Fed.
Okay.
So I sort of did it a little bit backwards. Yep. And this is a while ago. And I started my career probably right around the same time Bitcoin was created, a little bit before Bitcoin. I was in the pool at Ernie's house. Yeah. He was having a party. A lot of prominent libertarians like Michael Badnarik and some other people were in the pool. And he's like, hey, we've got some rich crypto guys, and I want to see if there's anything you can do from an estate planning perspective. And I'm like, well, you know what? I know what I would do for someone that was really rich normally, but I just don't know the lawyers or the foundations or the people to actually implement this plan from a crypto standpoint, but let me do some research. Well, randomly, 2 days later, this guy who I'd known said, hey, let me introduce you to my father. I'm like, well, who's your father? He's like, well, he's one of the top foundation guys in the country. So now I'm working with him. They've actually already implemented this before. And so long story short on this, we're finding ways to, if you have crypto, let's say you have a lot of crypto, I can now get it into the economy. You get major, major tax breaks for putting money into these charitable trusts. Hmm. And then the tax breaks then offset the income you're getting from this. And what, long story short, is we're basically doing the same techniques that guys like Warren Buffett and Bill Gates and all these scumbags like Mark Zuckerberg do.
Yep. 'Cause
when they say they give away their money, if people really knew what giving away your money, and again, I'm doing little air quotes here, they'd probably be outraged. But you know what? Don't hate the player. Hate the game. it's not my problem. I spent a lot of time figuring out and learning the techniques that basically the ultra elite use to avoid taxation on their own money and be able to preserve their own legacies. So part of my tagline for this is real legacies for virtual currencies. Ernie had come to me, had already told the story a little bit about, you know, hey, we need to get a program for these rich crypto guys. So then that led me to, like I just mentioned, the Nexus Earth Conference, which I went to probably about 2 weeks after this initial idea had started to form. So at that conference, met a bunch of people, and they were asking me about another financial concept known as a self-directed IRA, where you can do really advanced things like purchase cryptocurrencies in your IRA, or you could put like racehorses or basically anything except for a collectible and life insurance you can technically put in an IRA if you know what you're doing. But I didn't know what I was doing. That's pretty much one of the only things I didn't know how to do
with those specific things.
For in terms of like the financial industry, I didn't know. I just didn't know what. That's just one of the things that I didn't do. It wasn't right in the wheelhouse of what I did. So. So fast forward about another month, I went to a financial media conference, so nothing to do with Bitcoin or libertarianism, and really everybody was sort of laughing at me when I was talking to them about Bitcoin,
The other financial advisors.
Yeah, this is before it took off. This is probably weeks before it took off, probably 2 or 3 weeks before Bitcoin like really took
shot
off
up in to 10,000.
Before it was like in the mainstream like ethos of, you know, on CNBC constantly.
And it's flirting with 10,000 again today, by the way, for listeners maybe that haven't been paying close attention to the price. The Bitcoin price started to shoot up yesterday, basically when this conference started to gather some steam. Your first impression so far of Anarchapulco, did you guys go to the party last night? I didn't get a chance. I got here out.
After we had dropped you off, the line for us to register was probably just as long as that line. And Ernie and I
You mean to get into the hotel?
Yeah, so Ernie and I were at like the very end of that line.
Wow.
Maybe like five people back from the very, very end. So by the time we got to the room, it was probably close to like 11 local time here. Then we still went down a little bit, probably had two beers. And then went back up to the room probably around like 1:40. And I went for a run this morning and thought I'd just waltz right in and get a badge, and
turns out the line was humongous, and people are already starting to queue up yet again as the festivities have begun inside. Tim Pichot from libertarianadvisor.com, good luck with the new career path. I think that's very exciting. I know that you were saying that your family wasn't so sure about it, but hopefully you'll be able to prove them wrong here in the next
year. watched the Making Bitcoin documentary. They're like, you know, there's a guy named Charlie Schrem, and Charlie Schrem went to jail.
Yep.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm
we knew him before he went to jail.
Like, yeah, I saw the documentary. I know what you're talking about. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Have you met Charlie before?
I have not met Charlie.
I wonder if he's going to show up here. There's a lot going on here, and there are hundreds of people here already expecting, I think, well over 1,000 attendees over this next 5 days. I imagine today being Thursday, tomorrow Friday, you're still going to be seeing a lot of people rolling in throughout the day.
What I'm amazed at here is the no shortage of Liberty events that I've been to over time. Often you see the same faces, you know, different events and these sorts of things. Far fewer than 5% of the people do I recognize at all.
Yeah, there's a lot of faces here that we don't know, which is great. It means the Liberty movement is very large. It's growing. There are just a bunch of people coming here. So check out anarchapulco.com. I haven't checked to see where they're doing the live streaming. I'd heard that they are doing live streaming, so we'll have to learn more about that.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of connectivity right here.
We'll see what we can tell you about as far as where you can go to maybe see some of this, because we were told that this would have been a live streamed event. It's just that we've been sitting out here getting everything set up and trying to find some food, and And there's a lot of food, by the way. It's a great hotel. It's a beautiful location right on the beach in Acapulco, Mexico.
What did you think around safety? You had a first time as an escort. What was that like?
Yeah, so with agencies, there doesn't really tend to be a lot, if any, type of screening. And as an independent escort, myself and, you know, many other escorts will go through some sort of a screening process with their clients. So a screening process essentially involves something like you want a name and phone number, sometimes an email. Some people request an ID or a LinkedIn profile or some other valid social media profile. Others will request references or a deposit to show that the person is interested in proceeding with a date and, you know, that they're safe and sane, you know. That
or somewhat.
Or somewhat, yeah, exactly, you know. And, you know, personally, I've been pretty lucky. I've only had one real incident where it was a really bad experience and you know, had a really unfortunate incident with a client. But otherwise, you know, everything else has been really good for me.
What city were you, what did you start doing this in?
Toronto. I'm based in Toronto. I'm actually Canadian, so.
Now, the law's different up there? I mean, I suspect they are, but do you know how?
Yeah, so we actually put in a bill called Bill C-36 back in December 2014, and that says that it's legal to sell, but not legal to buy, and not really legal to advertise, and it's what is known as the Swedish or the Nordic model. We were creating an app, or Brad was creating an app that connected clients and escorts together in a safe and efficient manner, and so he wanted escort feedback on what that would look like. So he reached out to me, and here we are.
And you were already accepting cryptocurrency for payment for your services at that time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you were familiar with that.
Yeah, I was familiar with crypto, and some of the advertising platforms that I was using also accept crypto, so that was really great.
Like what, Backpage or whatever, those kind of things?
Backpage, I think, does, but I don't advertise there. Gotcha. I advertised on Eros and Slixa and a couple of other places, so they all accepted crypto, which I thought was excellent.
Yeah, because it's, well, it can be somewhat anonymous. Now, so Pink Date, the idea is to put it on the blockchain. I mean, that sounds dangerous, right? Don't people need to be careful with not being public about these sorts of things?
Right. So the way that we use blockchain stuff with Pink Date is in our investment side. So we're currently running a pre-ICO, which ends on February 21st. And when you buy in a token share to the company, once we start generating revenue, we're actually paying back dividends to our shareholders. And that is the information that will be put on a blockchain. Data from clients and escorts is actually held on private, secure, Tor-layered servers.
Oh.
I have no idea what this particular act is worth.
Yeah, so it really depends on the market that you're in.
Yeah.
In Toronto, generally an hour is going to run between $250 to $600 Canadian dollars. Different states here will have...
Is that what occurs during that hour, or is it who occurs during that hour, or... I'm not entirely clear.
So again, it just tends to be a rate for time and companionship.
Right.
Some escorts will say it involves or doesn't involve specific services, and others will not. That's really up to the discretion of the escort.
Okay.
So you put in the info, you put in your availability, the client says he wants a date tonight, and that sends some more information back over to you at that point?
So then the client will have gotten himself or herself or themselves verified on the platform, and we've got three different levels of verification. I will be able to see their verification, and if I accept the date, it will open a two-way communication between myself and this client.
Some sort of... Like encrypted communication.
That's right. Yeah. Like so that. A little messaging service. Yeah. And then
when does payment occur?
So payment can occur when they book the date. They can send the deposit then. So we are not selling a utility token. If you invest in our company, it is not a token to be used in exchange for escort services. It is a token share on which we will be paying dividends quarterly.
Does that mean that it's not legal for people in the U.S. to purchase these tokens?
Well, we're not incorporated in the U.S., and we're not we're an extra jurisdictional company right now, so you can essentially invest from anywhere.
Right.
And
we've if you're in the U.S., don't tell anybody about it.
Your local laws may apply.
Right. Correct. And we've actually got a couple there's a really great article on our Medium website, so it's medium.com/@PinkDate. And if you go there, we've got a way for you can for you to invest in Monero. So there's a good walkthrough article on that.
Which, of course, is another great anonymous currency.
Exactly.
As well.
And that's actually our preferred coin. But we do take Bitcoin, Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash, and
check
Ethereum.
Check out Zencash, too. They are also a private coin.
Yep, that's
excellent.
Right.
Excellent.
And
cool.
Very libertarian.
My one of my questions here is, you guys seem to be running as you know, a very sort of above board business. I like that. Mm-hmm. Consenting adults. How do you ensure that we're talking about a consenting adults in this situation?
Great. So we actually have a screening process that's going to be coming in, where right now it's going to be manual as we start onboarding people. A lot of it will be done by myself and some people that I will personally hire to do it. So we have some databases that will run back checks on for people. The police and, you know, law enforcement and things like that like to put these laws out, and they'll say, oh, it's to protect the children or protect minors, or it's, you know, they're trying to get rid of the coerced. But, you know, every time they go into
But they're customers.
Yeah, and every time they go into these stings, you know, with the notion of, you know, protecting the workers, the sex workers, they really end up giving people a lot more hassle than anything else.
Like an arrest record and having to go to court and all that.
Yeah, and paying fines, which a lot of these workers, you know, if you're an underprivileged sex worker, I would consider myself a very privileged person, and I recognize that. But there are a lot of sex workers out there who still do street work who cannot afford a $50 fine, and this is really their only way of trying to make some cash. So, whether you know, and they would consent to it still, but there are different situations in which people find themselves that, you know, enables them to do sex work. And so if you're a law, you know, if you get busted by the cops and, you know, now you've got this record and, you know, it's just really a bad thing. And the way that the police and, you know, media kind of handle it, they put it into a bad light, and it's not near as like that.
Tell me about, first of all, what is it like to be in Venezuela? What's the scene for cryptocurrency like there? Because we've read stories about the miners being arrested for, yes, like the secret police investigating Bitcoin miners.
I won't say it's the secret police. I would say it's just like regular police. As you see, there's an opportunity for them to get some money. So when before it got regulated, because actually now it's legal to mine, and even the authorities, as they see the potential of getting out of this crisis through cryptocurrencies, they have actually made a decree to mandate to different regions, small regions like municipal authorities or governmental authorities, that they're actually going to be mining farms in each state.
The state's going to run mining farms.
Yes.
Now, does that have to do with the new Petro, or is that they're mining Bitcoin?
Well, that's after the announcement of Petro. Mm-hmm. I mean, basically, the government opened its eyes through cryptocurrencies and blockchain technology. So basically, they're pushing it. They're going all in with cryptocurrencies.
Well, it's a desperate move because, I mean, they're such in bad shape financially over
there.
What's the Petro? The Petro, you haven't heard about the Petro? I'm sorry, thanks for asking. We should explain that. The Venezuelan government has announced their own supposed cryptocurrency.
Yes. I mean,
it hasn't come out yet. Now, we can't hear you because you're off the mic, but if you could tell us about that.
Well, actually, it's backed with oil reserves, diamonds, and gold. That's the whole idea.
So they claim. So the dollar today priced $1 for 237,149. That's the dollar price, and then 224,014 is the dollar Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's unreal. Price. This is what is making the hyperinflation go like ramping.
Well, a year ago, it was what, 20,000 or whatever. I mean, it's just gone up. It's shot up.
Yeah, it's like crazy. I mean, one day after the other, you see the race on the dollar Bolivar's price, and this is what's making people poor every day, devaluating the Bolivar every day.
You get paid, so, and by the time you go and buy the groceries, it's
crazy.
Nothing.
It's crazy. And even salaries that get affected, and suppliers get affected. Everything, the whole economy gets affected by this website, basically. This is why cryptocurrencies has such an important role right now at this moment in the country.
Well, no, it's not. Dollar today isn't creating inflation, right? That's the line of the president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro. They're the ones creating the inflation by printing out money.
They're printing out money,
and
yes.
And then the dollar today is just reporting.
The thing is, you don't even find the cash on the street. Actually, there's a fork right now with the Bolivar. There's the digital Bolivar, and then you have the Bolivar cash. You know, the cash worth even more than the digital one.
You actually told us just before we went on the air that you left Venezuela. You're now living in Costa Rica?
Yes, I moved kind of 1 year and a half ago, basically because of my wife got pregnant, and then it's quite risky for me, and obviously as a family guy now, I think first of all about health issues and, you know, whatever can happen in the country. So obviously we're going through a
Medicine is barely available.
It's hard to get, and if you really need something right away, I mean, I lost one cousin, an 8-year-old cousin.
Jeez.
Because of the lack of medicine in the right moment.
I mean, even basic antibiotics are just very, very rare.
It's hard to find. Yes, yeah. It's hard to find because obviously you need to pay in foreign currency to the pharmaceutical industry, and this is not happening.
Because they don't want bolivars. Which is where a lot of the problem comes from, where there's an exchange rate that the government sets.
Yes.
And so nobody wants to bring products in because they don't want the bolivar, because the real value is what the black market value is, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
And the black market value is 200,000 bolivar to one U.S. dollar, whereas the official exchange rate is 10 to 1.
It's crazy, but 220, that was actually this is today, but like 2-3 weeks ago, it was like around 180.
100,000, yep. We had the opportunity to meet you like a year ago or a half a year ago or something like that.
I think it's been about that.
In Keene. And, of course, as you know, New Hampshire is a bit of a cryptocurrency mecca. There's a lot of cryptocurrency action there. And there's actually several Bitcoin vending machines in New Hampshire. In fact, four, I think, just popped up. I don't know if you saw
that.
Yeah, the city of Manchester now has 5 Bitcoin vending machines in it. And one company brought in 3 at once and just put them down in 24-hour gas stations. So there's an unbelievable amount of competition in
somebody's
the world.
Somebody's doing activism in Manchester. It's great.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's business in this particular case. I don't
business
think it's
competition. I'll give you that.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk a little bit about the world of cryptocurrency vending. You've been in it for how long?
Maybe about 8 to 9 months now, so, you know, almost coming up a year now. You know, quit my day job for this, and just been kind of traveling around, you know, just kind of looking for locations to put the, you know, like these Bitcoin ATMs.
You're
Bitcoin.
The salesman. You're the on-the-streets guy who's talking with the potential locations.
Yeah.
And, like, pitch me. What's it like when you come in? You typically go into gas stations? Or
So it's mostly like 24-hour gas stations or maybe like a 24-hour diner.
Okay.
I've been trying to talk to, you know, some chain, you know, stores and everything, trying to get a deal with them. A little bit more difficult. But usually, you know, like, I'll walk into, you know, like these gas stations, you know, like, hey, is the owner here? Yada, yada. And I'll be like, yeah, we'd like to put like a Bitcoin machine in here.
We've got Martin Prescott with us. He's one of the ambassadors of the website Load.One. That's O-N-E, Load.One.
It is.
And it's LODE.One. What is a cryptographic silver monetary system?
Actually, we could see, you know, coming, and it's coming right away, and it's going to keep up going even more and more. Mining companies, mints, which want to tokenize, you know, gold or silver or any different kind of physical assets on the blockchain. But we had an issue, a kind of an issue with this, because it's a beautiful idea to edge against market crash. 15 days ago, we obviously saw most of the Bitcoins and all cryptocurrencies going down. Mm-hmm. And the only one who did great was obviously the physically backed ones. So these kind of projects have great value because they will represent an edge against cryptocurrency crashes. But they're still centralized, meaning the mining company owns these coins, and obviously they profit from the coin circulation or the way the coin is used. So what we wanted to create, it was a full-on monetary system, which allows people like you and I, Ian, mm-hmm. to deposit 100 ounces of silver or more and own the monetary system the same way as the Fed does it.
So you're looking for somebody to purchase silver or to send silver? How does somebody get in? What are the steps to somebody who's listening to this? Like, well, I want to get involved.
Yeah, thank you for the question. Yeah.
I love silver. I want to help.
Yes.
Or be involved or something.
So you understand that the project itself, we don't want to deal with fiat. So SWP, which is the private entity, independent, who do take care of the customer, so even you can deliver the silver that you already own, mm-hmm. or gold, and they will give you a ratio of the day regarding, you know, the ratio of gold and silver.
Uh-huh.
But the gold that you deposit will be transferred, you know, and into silver, because the system only allows pure silver. That's all what we go for. So SWP deal with the fiat to silver, because they are allowed to sell you bullions if you want to buy bullions to deposit in the load project. They deal with the people who wants to deliver the silver.
Yep.
Which so they already own.
So if I've got some silver that's in safekeeping, I can send that to one of these locations.
To the private entity, which is SWP. Mm-hmm.
Yep, and then they put it in a vault, one of their vaults.
For us.
For you. And then, since I was the person who sent the silver, I get some amount of a crypto?
There you go. So we have a two-token-based system. The one which is the monetary system, which is called the load coin.
Load coin.
So you own the monetary system. You own a stake of the ownership.
Hasn't this been done before or something like this?
It's been done with gold, but I haven't heard it done with silver. Silver's been much more traditionally a currency than gold. You can't buy things as easily with gold. Gold's the currency of kings, right? Well, kings don't do a lot of business. Right. Silver is the currency of the people. Or at least traditionally.
It has an industrial value, right?
Yeah,
it's so freaking undervalued right now by the market.
They've been telling me that for 10 years,
yeah,
Martin.
And we have a ratio of 80 to 1 compared to gold.
Yeah.
And the historic,
it used to be 20 to 1.
You know, it's 20 to 1, 15 to 1. So it has an industrial value and also undervalued by the market. I mean, right there, you have a very good reason why to be a silver investor.
Sure. Well, I hear it. Yeah.
Yeah. As you already are, right? Mm-hmm.
All right.
I own silver.
So yeah, well, right. Before cryptocurrency, we were into alternative currencies like silver and gold.
Yep.
So you know, we haven't gotten rid of the silver and gold.
No.
In fact, I actually bought some gold with cryptocurrency a long time ago.
We made the choice to be a 777 token on Ethereum platform, which is the future of the protocols coming on Ethereum.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
It's already 7.7. Many people don't know about it.
I don't know what 7.7s even are.
First I've heard of it.
And you know what
it
means,
right? When you hit the jackpot, right? 7.7.7?
Yeah, it's all about freedom. So
okay.
They want us to be the first coin to be on 7.7.7 ERC because it represents freedom. Monetary system owned by the people, for the people, and built by the people.
Interesting.
That's amazing. So load.one, L-O-D-E.one is where people can go to learn about this. Are you already accepting the deposits?
We do. We don't have any ICO. We're not, because we're already funded. It's more that now we want the people who can afford 100 ounces, which represent practically, 1,700 U.S. at the time we speak.
Okay.
So they can either deliver what they already own, take arrangements, they go to our website, they create their profile. There's two tabs, buy or deliver. So you click buy if you want to transfer some BTC or fiat to buy some silver to deposit in the project, or you click deliver to deliver what you already have, and the SWP people will contact you shortly, and
make that
you deposit the silver into the project, and welcome home.
You were here last year. We did a brief interview with you last year as well. Give us a comparison last year to now in Acapulco. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's just three times bigger. It's really, on the one hand, exciting to see it grow so much. And on the other hand, you know, it was nice that last year was a little bit more intimate.
You lose the intimacy, that's for sure.
But it's cool. It's awesome. It's so exciting to see so many people here. And you know, there were a lot of people who were refused because they sold out all the tickets.
Yeah.
So it's growing so fast.
I don't know if they're going to keep trying to make it bigger or just stop it and say this is an event that we're going to have. If you get the tickets, you get them, and if you don't, you don't. You know, get them early. Don't wait, won't we? Don't delay. You have been a long-time YouTuber. You've been doing things for a long time there. I remember finding you probably more than a decade ago. When did you start putting out videos of, you know, your thoughts, your opinions? You're in the streets. For people that don't know, you know, historically, you're one of those guys with a megaphone in the streets of London on YouTube way long time ago.
Yeah, I started my career at Speaker's Corner, which is this place in London where you're allowed to go and say whatever you like. And then I kind of realized after not so long that, hold on, if we've really got freedom of speech in the UK, how come you have to be there
on
a Sunday
one corner.
In this one little corner where you can say anything?